Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, hello, everyone. This is your host, Kathy Hackle, and welcome to Tech Magic, where you come for the tech and stay for the magic. In this podcast, we talk about everything that's happening in the technology space, gaming, VR, AR, AI, everything in between. And I am joined by my amazing guest co-host, Lee Keebler. Hey, Lee, what's up?
Hey, good afternoon, good morning. It depends on what side of the coast you're on.
Evening over here.
Oh, that's
we're recording
right, that's
on
right.
Monday evening. So
is
yes.
It evening over there? Okay, I just had lunch, so it's fine.
It's evening over here, and I'm ready to. After this, I'm going to go help my kids with homework. So yeah, they still have that.
But it's like it's you're almost on Christmas break. How are you?
Oh no. There's no. There's no stopping the homework train. Sometimes they get carried away at schools. I'll tell you, but.
You just pump it into ChatGPT, let it do the homework for you. I mean, that's really the life lesson that they need to be learning at the end of the day. Did I say that out loud? I don't think I was supposed to say that out loud.
You know what I was thinking? I was thinking of writing an article on like how to talk to your children about AI, not just ChatGPT, but in many different forms. Because I do think, because I have like so many parents at school that reach out to me. Yeah. Asking me about the AI in Snapchat or like, you know, the chat GPT, that's what they say. Tell me about the chat GPT. I'm like, just chat GPT. But yeah, I get a lot of questions. I get questions about social as well from parents, you know, and just.
That's just a landfill though, of like landmines. It's just, that's tricky.
Yeah.
You know, my parents were both school teachers. So I grew up in public education system with public educators as parents. And I was talking to a teacher recently and asked her, you know, what do you do about ChatGPT? And like, that's gotta be wrecking how do you do take homework? What do you do there? And she gave the best answer. I don't know if I've ever told you this, but she gave the most insightful answer. And it was, she's converted all of her tests to oral exams.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's like, it's so much more important that students learn how to speak and learn how to speak in front of people. Yeah. And that's the only way to know if it's actually in their brain. Doesn't matter if they can write it down on paper. It won't matter in the future if they can write it down on paper. They've got to be able to say it out loud. And I was just like, that is an insightful teacher. That's just one of those brilliant things that, you know, yeah, we have to change it up.
Well, and I think oral exams also allow the kids to practice delivering information, public speaking, which is hard for some people. Like,
yeah.
I love it. You do great too, but it's hard for some folks. So
as a kid, I had a speech impediment real bad.
I did.
I wasn't actually a public speaking person until college. I got involved from a technical standpoint. Our college had a campus radio station. And so they had me come in and do campus radio, but I had quite a speech impediment for a very long time. And that's, I got really over it through radio, you know,
through radio. Just, okay.
Yeah,
so
practice. Yeah.
Through technology in some ways you got over this.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That is amazing. I would have never guessed. Cause I've always been like, I want to be on stage. I want to talk to people. Yeah. Like always super like storyteller expressive. Like that's been me my whole life. And my youngest daughter is very much like that. She's dun, 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 dun. Right.
Oh, I was that kid for sure. But I had a weird speaking pattern and all of that. So yeah, it was something that came out of having access to technology that could record my voice.
Mm-hmm.
which was new back then, to have like a computer being able to record audio back in the, you know, mid late 90s. That was so new, and it was such a huge benefit to me to actually get to where I am right now. So yeah, you just never know where the technology fills those gaps in. It's crazy.
That's super interesting. So in a past life, when I used to be a journalist, like back in the day, cause that's what I was when I came out of college, I was a TV journalist and did tons of TV in front of the camera and producing behind the camera and stuff. And I remember I was working for a Spanish language television station in Atlanta. And in Costa Rica, where my parents are from and where I'm from, you know, I'm Costa Rican American, but we don't roll our R's. Okay. Which is very strange for Latin American Spanish, right? But we don't roll our R's. We say carro. Like we don't roll our R's. We just don't. Like that's just right. How we do it. So I remember when I got hired by the Spanish language TV channel, you know, most of the people were from other countries, right? Costa Ricans are, it's a very small population. And I remember they would send me to language speech classes to teach me, to have someone teach me roll my R's, because it didn't, you know, for a lot of like the Spanish speaking viewers, they're like, why can't she roll her R's? It was very, very strange. But I remember, like, I think if I would have had some, you know, some use of technology to kind of hear that, because I'm really good at listening to a language and repeating it. I'm really good at languages in that sense, but maybe finding a way to hear myself or find a way to kind of roll my R's in some way. Yeah. I don't know. Like I can't roll my R's.
It does lead to like a kind of interesting AI question of like, as we see 11 labs come up with better, more practical uses for speech synthesis, if they're going to start being able to like build a dictation differential between Spanish speaking languages that do roll their R's and don't roll their R's. And then you have, you know, or is it just going to have to kind of default to one for a little while? I don't know. Those type of, those are the things that I stay up at night staring at the ceiling wondering about, and I shouldn't be.
Well, that's really interesting, because eventually, you know, are they going to have like English speaking with different, you know, the different across the U.S., right? Because people have, you know, someone from New York talks differently and someone from Texas. And
I've seen Australia, Australian and English and Irish and American. All of those are categories inside 11 Labs. And it's quite something to see them be able to break that down in their synthesis and become geographically appropriate, even though they're technically speaking all the same language.
I do remember, and I think I shared this in our Slack, a story from a couple of months ago. People trying to confuse AI, like the voice AI, using Argentinian Spanish, which sounds very different than like Spanish from Spain or Spanish from Mexico or Costa Rica. Like it's like, che, like it just sounds different. Sounds more like Italian in some ways. And I'm sure Argentinians are going to love me saying that. But yeah, I'm going to find that story. I'm going to put it in the notes because I think it was a really interesting story and it's aligned to what we're talking about. I do want to kind of head into our first story, which is huge news. And we're not going to spend too much time on this because I think it's being talked about across all media. But it is pretty much the landmark moment that Europe agrees to a landmark AI regulation deal. You know, with this political agreement, which is massive and took them, you know, over like through the night, it took them a lot of hours and a lot of days for this to happen. But with this political agreement, the EU is moving towards becoming the first major world power to enact laws governing AI.
Now, you know, some lazy politician ran this through ChatGPT to write this, like, right? Like, you know what? I got a number of hours on this, and it's close to the holidays. You know, we got to get this done. All right. Just let's
have AI regulate itself. There you go. Let's put it through ChatGPT.
But you know what? It's more than we've done. So hats off to them.
You know, kudos to the EU. I mean, I think it's smart that they're finding some ways to regulate. And, you know, as much as some people hate that word, I do think, you know, as we need to have some type of, you know, temperature check, checkpoint, something.
Yeah. Like, yeah. If you hate the word regulate, there's a chance you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. Now you can overregulate 100%. I completely agree with that. But if just the word itself cringes you a little bit, that gives me pause, because there's obviously a need to look at this. We have regulations in the US, and they've been what have established the modern economy and a modern lifestyle that we have here. You start pulling all those things out, all of a sudden things get hairy. Like, you just don't want to worry about that. And right now, with AI as genuinely a threat to actual employment for many people, mm-hmm. there's logical reason to start writing some rules quickly. Post-haste.
I do agree we have to have something in place, right? I do feel like there are certain camps, especially like people in Silicon Valley or around Silicon Valley, that are, you know, many of them are aligned with effective accelerationism. That don't want any type of regulation. They just want to move forward really, really fast. But I'm kind of in the middle. Like I've always told you, like I'm in the middle here. Like I feel like I want technology to keep progressing fast, but I do believe in those checkpoints. So that for some people listening to this that are, you know, effective accelerationists, the word regulation is something that they do not abide by or they do not want.
If they can do it without leveraging other people's data, then by all means, but you don't have a say in it when you're not leveraging, when you're out there like leveraging other people's data. If you've got to rely on other people, your accelerationism does not mean anything to me. Well, if you can do it with your own data, do it. You know, like
but that's the thing. A lot of these models are black boxes. We don't even know, you know, we can suspect some of them we know that are using, you know, training data on our own data or things that we wrote, et cetera. But then you get into this whole copyright trade, you know, who owns the IP? I think the courts are trying to figure out here in the US, but you know,
well, that's a bigger question too, right? I'm thankful for it. And I hope someone can eventually qualify if AI can even make intellectual property.
Well, originally there was a case that said that originally that you could copyright that. And then there was something that said no. And then I think there was something in the courts that was talking about, can AI copyright its own material if AI is the one creating it, right? As an entity, AI as an entity.
I think you have to establish it as an actual accepted intellectual, right? Like at some, because you're talking about an intellectual property for IP. So, okay, I can accept a property, but if you want to qualify that as intellectual, then you are saying that this particular machine has intellect.
Has intellect.
I don't know if I'm there or not, right? Like that's such a hard thing to.
Doesn't Sophia the robot have like citizenship in the Emirates or something like that? So I don't know. I mean, maybe she can copyright whatever she creates. So
she's got
citizenship somewhere in the world. I remember seeing that somewhere in the news. So, you know, so that leads me into kind of this first story on an article that came out in the New York Times recently, and we're going to include that in the notes. It says AI, using AI for talking to the dead. And I know you and I have talked about this in a bit. Like we've all definitely, you know, you and I have thought about this.
Chat GPT Ouija.
Oh no. I hadn't thought about that. Stiff as a board wizard. There's like, no. Oh my gosh. You know what? They should remake. Remember that movie, The Craft?
It's just a bunch of kids sitting around a laptop.
They should remake The Craft in today's world. So it's ChatGPT Ouija board. But yeah, do you remember that movie?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
so they should remake that one, but you know, with ChatGPT, I guess. But yeah, going back to the story. So in this New York Times article, they're talking about different people using AI to kind of, you know, recreate, you know, family members that have passed away, using companies like Storyfile, which many people have seen or some of their work. I believe Storyfile worked with William Shatner on some stuff. Hereafter AI as well. And they talked about several stories in it. A woman that had her father scanned and he recorded a lot of things. And now he's passed away for almost a year. And whenever she's dealing with issues, some really strong ones, she'll turn to that. She said she didn't do so much for herself. She did more for her children and grandchildren. There's also another story of a person that got, you know, scanned and did the whole AI thing shortly before dying. And when they died, they actually had that, let's call it that AI version of that person that had passed away at their funeral service. And some people are really impressed. Some people are weirded out by it.
That is strange.
Maybe too soon, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that is one of the like earliest episodes of that TV show Upload on Amazon. It depicts that in a very comical way. Mm-hmm. But the fact that there's still an open practice for that is super interesting. The whole idea of, so for people who don't know, if you're utilizing GPT, you can you can tell it to take on the persona of fill in the blank, and you can be as specific as you want. So you can say, take on the persona of a high school 12th grade American literature English teacher and evaluate this 5-paragraph essay and let me know what you think. And it will just do that. But you can get really creative and more in depth into it and actually pull out fictional characters and say, take on the persona of Dr. Frankenstein and Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and see, you know, and read this 5-paragraph essay about the perspective of blah, 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 blah. And it would do that, right? So you can get more and more creative with how you do this. And to the point where, to some level, you can do it with actual human people if there's a lot of information, like a William Shakespeare. Who there's just enough information, there's enough of his works out there to take on that persona. So it is an interesting approach. You're not getting a real intellectual insight to it, but it is so fascinating to be able to do that and kind of dig a little bit deeper. My wife was working on a project over the weekend, and it involved, don't ask why, it involved a document from the mid-1500s. from Kent, England, and she was trying to read through this, and this is written in old English.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
it's not an easy text to read, and she's like, can you make heads or tails of what this is saying? So I looked at it and I'm like, I can't read this. You can look at it and know it's English, mm-hmm. and just scratch your head. I said, you know what, this is selectable text, let's drop this into GPT and have it analyze it. So we just copied it in and I said, read the following text and convert it to modern day English, which makes it easier to understand. And that's it. I just copied and pasted in there. And it was the weirdest form of translation I've ever seen. It worked so well.
It worked. That's interesting.
It worked incredibly well, mm-hmm. but it was still translating English to English, but it was making it functionally understandable.
So it's definitely trained in the model is trained in Old English, right?
At some point, yeah. It knows how to interpret whatever was being said. And it was eye-opening because all of a sudden this fairly locked document that we had that we were trying to decipher was wide open. And it would have taken weeks for me to go and kind of look at it line by line and go, what does this sentence mean? What does this one mean? What does this one mean? And then try to piece it all together. And it just popped out 2 paragraphs. I was like, oh, that's what that meant. And then I could make the correlation. I could read the both. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, obviously that's what they were saying.
That's where these technologies, we just start to have those conversations of like good and bad, right? If you're using this to like have someone live on and maybe exploit that person in the postmortem, that's a negative one. But if you have it and you're using these technologies for historical preservation, I've always been a huge proponent of that. And I'll give you an example. So when I worked at the Volumetric Capture Studio here in the United States in DC, Avatar Dimension, I didn't get to do it, but I was going to have my dad scanned. I was going to have him scanned reading Llama Llama Red Pajama, which is one of my kids' favorite books.
Yes.
Llama Llama. I wanted to get him scanned, right? It's very expensive. And I want to just do a short little bit of the book just to keep that forever for them, right? For memory. We never got to do it. So maybe one day I'll get to do it with him. I would love to have that memory with him. So that's something that when I start to think about that, having my dad scanned, right, and keeping that memory, I remember some of the work that we did was around historical preservation. We had a Native American tribe come and say, hey, can we do some scans of us doing one of our dances? Because a lot of the people are forgetting how to do it. And in order to perform a dance or even do a language, right, it's better to see it in 3D because you can see all the nuances of the dance and the turns, or even language, you can see all the nuances of how to use your tongue and move your lips and your teeth. So I feel like some of these technologies with AI, with volumetric video, with spatial computing, when used correctly for historical preservation, and Unity, for example, is a company that has been doing some really amazing work around this, I think are extremely, extremely powerful.
Yeah, I was thinking, there has to be a lot of data to back all of this up. But there is enough data behind, say, like a Albert Einstein, right? Plenty of publications, plenty of information, plenty of like life, work, history, all of that stuff is available. Very public figure to recreate and take on the persona of. You're not going to get a one-to-one, you know. But it is interesting because you can ask these questions and the AI has done the back-end research, has access to back-end data that for the little stuff that you would never think to include or even possibly even know about because it's such an exhaustive amount of study of just like, well, what would they say in their work life history with their actual life balance and you know, maybe family history and things like that. It's pretty wild. You know, we were working on this project and I was that was what set me off to just leveraging the tool left and right. We had to come up with a genealogy that we were getting conflicting data between two people with the same name. And I said, where's the family tree in this?
Yeah.
And sure enough, even it could pop out the family tree that I was looking for. And it was like, oh, this person and this person share the same name because they're cousins. I was like, oh,
that makes sense. Yeah.
I'd have never found that. We're talking about people who were alive in the early 1500s.
Wow.
There's not a whole lot of like hand documentation on this. Right. So I don't know, but the documentation that's out there, it's evidently gone through and processed. So I'm starting to feel old at this point because I'm just blown away, but I am seriously looking at it going, I have no reason to use Google anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I do not know what Google does in this situation. They've got to catch up and fast.
Have you used Gemini?
I have not.
Did you see the announcements on Gemini? Like I haven't used Gemini, but obviously, you know, there are news out there saying this is the ChatGPT killer. Like I don't know. Like I haven't demoed it and I haven't really dug into the news as much as most people with Gemini. I was busy last week when Gemini came out, but there's, I think a lot of,
well, there were some questions about their demo being maybe not completely on the up and up, which has happened in the past for other big tech companies. You know, sometimes you just kind of fake it till you make it. Cause you got to do the show. We'll see. I'm just not ready to put the flame out on ChatGPT. Honestly, the biggest thing that's a disappointment with ChatGPT for me is its name. What a horrible, like, as
from
someone
a
out of
perspective,
yes. From a branding perspective, I freaking hate that name. I
got
get
Claude,
it.
Claude, Bard, you know. Gemini, ChatGPT. Yeah.
No one's using ChatGPT as a verb right now.
Like, let me ChatGPT that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it just feels so weird. So yeah, a little bit of branding marketing on the fringe.
I think
there.
It's purely tech people naming the product and maybe 100%. The marketing people weren't there yet. Cause if it was like, marketing team would be like, no.
Yeah. But you would think that like maybe ChatGPT could rename itself. Like that should be the first
question. It's too late. It's too far gone. But so using AI for historical preservation.
100%.
Future or fad?
What? Totally the future. Future and the past.
Future and the past. I love that. Yes. I think it's the future, it's the past, and it is the present as well.
Yes.
I think we're doing a lot of work, a lot of us are doing interesting work around historical preservation. So.
It's an informational time machine because you can ask it things from the past. You can ask it for predictions towards the future and you can ask it for the current present goings on. Mm-hmm. Like it is a wild west scenario right now that as someone who lives and breathes it, I still wake up in the morning, try something different and am shocked that it works.
It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, and I do think, you know, whoever did The Craft, the movie, call us. We'd be happy to work and help you write the adaptation for, you know, for the 2020s.
We'll just run it through ChatGPT to write the script. We'll write it with
ChatGPT. We'll write it together, right? Okay, so moving on to our next story. And this, we won't go too deep because we've talked about this for a bit. But Lego in Fortnite, huge success, amazing numbers. Everyone's talking about it. Good job, Epic Games, crushing it. I mean,
I got so excited about that Lego announcement. The trailer for that was totally not directed towards kids. That I'll tell you what this is. This combination of Fortnite and Lego is for the dads. It's for the dad. No, it really, like,
parents.
I really,
it's for the
parents who want to play video games with their kids.
Yes.
That's what this is. Cause I said for the dads, cause I was talking to a friend of mine who's a dad who's historically not let his children play Fortnite. Yeah. And he was not about to change his mind. It was too violent. They just weren't old enough for the whole like battle royale shooter game thing. And I said, take a look at this instead. And he looked at it, and that 80s music pumped in, and he's totally from that generation. He's like, oh, this is different. I'm down for this. And I was like, oh, that's what they've done. And what great timing. Right before Christmas, when everyone's got their time off and you've got kids home and you've got a couple of days and you can sit down and play video games with the kids. Yeah.
Perfect timing. I wish they had Lego sets, though. But anyway, perfect timing. But all my kids. Yeah, shocking that they don't. I hope they do. But, you know, all my kids, like, plus a lot of the games that they've been playing. So Talking Tom Gold Run. So my youngest one plays that. They have running ads on the Lego Fortnite thing constantly. So like we've seen the promos. We've seen like she's like, yeah. And then my son and I were like, okay, let's play. We were going to play this weekend, but we got kind of busy and, you know, a lot of stuff. But I was like, yeah, hand me the Switch. Let's play. It's been interesting. But I'm hearing a lot of parents saying, oh, this is cool because now we can play Fortnite with our kids.
Yep.
So introducing them to this new, you know, to Fortnite, which is a game they enjoy. I'm even saying like, it's like I have a squad now with my kids, my new Fortnite squad are my kids, even though they think that's cringe.
Adorable though.
It's adorable for me, but they're like, mom, don't say that. That is so cringe. Like, no, mom, you're not cool. Once again, it's always like, mom, no, you're not cool. But yeah, like tons of ads in different games. They're excited. Lots of, you know, I think, yeah, great time for the holidays. Play with your kids.
It's a great time. And it is a bad time to be Minecraft. This just felt like such a go at the Minecraft player. It'll be very interesting.
I think there's space for all of them. You know, if my kid's younger, like Minecraft is good. Like my kids still play, you know, my kids play a lot of different games. Minecraft is still one of them.
Definitely felt like a Minecraft attack. I think people were expecting like more Roblox or something. I was like, no, Roblox is going to be fine.
Oh, yeah. Roblox has so much in the pipeline right now with concerts coming, Worlds coming. I mean, Cher is doing the special. Like, she just launched the Christmas album and she's doing something.
Oh, I missed this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's all these amazing holiday things happening in Roblox. So, you know, kudos to Epic Games. Kudos to Roblox. Or doing amazing work. I do feel like this puts a little bit of pressure on Minecraft. I do agree with you on doing more things because Minecraft's been very close to working with companies and brands. And they've done a few things, but it's been very close. Very hard to talk to anyone at Mojang within Microsoft for any type of activation. I remember trying. It's been really – I mean, I had a friend from a big record label, and I was trying to get him to talk to Mojang. Impossible. And, like, this is top talent, record label people – you know, but that puts a little bit of pressure on them if they want to kind of keep up. That being said, Minecraft is healthy. Like from an educational standpoint, you know.
Yeah. For sure. Good.
So let's see. Lego and Fortnite fad.
Oh, the Lego. Nothing with Lego in it is a fad. Like that's Lego is forever. Like,
Lego is forever. I love that. It's like a tattoo. Lego is forever.
Those little bricks are going to outlive us all. Like they're just whatever they're made out of doesn't go away.
I agree. So, okay, that's awesome. Now we're going to go to our third and last story before we go to interviews. Okay. 'Tis the season for VR.
Yes. Amazing. I was shocked. I love VR. I'm a huge VR addict. I've been in this VR. I've got a Virtual Boy from Nintendo circa 1995 that is an OG original from when I was a kid. I'm still surprised.
That's like old school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I got vision problems because of that thing. Crazy. Like, it's just.
I mean, DK1 is old school, but like,
Yep.
Ooh, that's crazy. Okay, so the reason we're talking about 'tis the season for VR is because there was a story in, I believe, a CNET. I can't remember right now, but. That talked about how VR headsets outsold the AirPods during Black Friday.
Shocking.
I'm not shocked, I'll be honest.
There's a new iPhone. We're in a year of a new, we have a whole new iPhone series. We've had a full iOS update. You've got a whole new gen of hardware. You've got an iOS update. these are synonymous with that hardware. And it's a stocking stuffer size, right? Like for the holidays. And it's significantly cheaper than a VR headset. And yet the Quest did it. Yeah. And it wasn't just the Quest 3. They saw the boost in the Quest 2 as well. So there, this was the part that we've not seen Meta do before. It's mm-hmm. always been new hardware comes out and then they pretty quickly retire the previous generation. Yeah. They didn't do that this time. The Quest 3 and the Quest 2 are both in production.
I had a lot of like parents reach out to me during right before Black Friday asking me, oh, we saw they saw the Quest 2 on sale. They're like, should I get this for my kid? And a lot of people did because they didn't want to buy the Quest 3 or some people, a lot of people did buy the Quest 3 though. But yeah, so this is from CDNet, Amazon Black Friday 2023 sales numbers. VR headsets outsold AirPods. I'm not surprised in the sense that I feel like AirPods have a lot more competition, you know, than mm-hmm. the VR headsets. And mm-hmm. I feel like every kid I know, like Christmas, like, what do you want? I want this. I want that. You know, I want V-Bucks or I want Robux and I want a VR headset. So, yeah.
That's the part, you know, as I talk to people who come into our business and they still, I get the question of, well, what's the real adoption rate of the hardware? And I said, it's not you. It's everyone younger than you. I don't really know anyone who is in the Gen Z to Gen Alpha era that don't want or already have a VR headset. It's been adopted. It's just not 100% of the millennials, and it's like almost less than Gen X, and it's almost no baby boomer generation, right? So it's just this weird slope that comes through. But it the adoption rate has been
amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah. I still think we're a couple of years away from actually having something that people are going to use all day. Right now it's a gaming. Oh, totally. It's for gaming, it's for working out, it's for, you know, for maybe meditating or things.
It's the Game Boy of VR.
Good point.
You know, it's mm-hmm. it's portable. It's not as good as having the full console experience. Like Game Boy mm-hmm. definitely didn't look like a Super Nintendo, right? So it's not as good as if it's hooked to your PC, but it's good.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of that era of like, it's that bridging gap. And I think a bit of that trough of disillusionment, to use a bunch of like industry buzzwords all at once, comes from people thinking they haven't seen an exponential increase in the technology, but we have. We just didn't see it where we thought. Everyone was expecting by 2024, we'll have photorealistic graphics. Well, no one wants your photorealistic graphics. But I remember those conversations. I remember watching people say that in TED Talks and me just scratching my head of like, I'd rather get rid of the tether, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather decrease the weight. I'd rather it be an all-in-one. I'd rather it do hand tracking. All of these conversations that I wanted to see it do, and everyone was like, well, they were looking at the graphical and gameplay and speech recognition and eye tracking. And we do have headsets that do all of those things. But no one actually needs your eye tracking. Mm-hmm. I mean, the basic player, right?
The basic player. Like the teenagers that are getting this don't necessarily need the eye tracking. Unless you're doing something in training, then yes. Like there's a or if there's a like accessibility issue.
For the basic gamer, I would argue they don't need color pass-through, right? Unless we start pumping out better content, better mm-hmm. games that play in that augmented reality space, which is something that I think we're going to see in 2024.
Yeah. So, you know, VR headsets under the tree, future or fad?
Oh, they're already under those trees. You know, I mean, we can see the number, right? Santa has gone through the Amazon wish list, has checked it twice. And it probably doesn't matter if you were naughty or nice. You probably got one.
You're
going to
get your VR headset.
You know, that's, and they've done such a good job of like still doing, you know what they've done that a lot of people haven't been doing is they still bundled the games mm-hmm. into it. So you get their best game, Asgard's Wrath 2. It's supposed to be the best quality possible for this particular generation of headset. And it comes bundled. It's part of it. It's free. Like, they've done a great job with connecting that. And it'll be interesting to see how others follow suit. You know, it's going to happen.
Well, yeah, I think I'm excited, you know, and I'm in a couple of years, maybe not next year, but in a couple of years, it'll be whatever the Vision Pro might be in the future.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll be under the tree on everyone's list.
I was talking with someone today and they asked, what do I think the two main technologies, like tangible mm-hmm. technologies, not digital technologies, but like tangible technology is going to be for 2024? And I said, it's going to be VR headsets. And I honestly think this, and e-ink displays. I think we're going to see a big push in e-ink displays.
Elaborate. Say more.
With watching, and I just got one, and I think that I'm a little like hardware biased because I've been so impressed with it, but like Kindle and Amazon mm-hmm. pushed with this idea of the Scribe, which yeah. was a ink display you can write on. And then the Remarkable 2 came out and it's doing very well. And there's a third party that I'd have to go back and look up. They have a colored e-ink display. And I'm like, oh, I've not seen. Mm-hmm. Now you've got my attention. And as I've played with these technologies and I'm watching that little corner, I've always been a fan of e-ink mm-hmm. and yeah. I've always thought it was underutilized. And honestly, if I could get a faster e-ink display cell phone, I would switch to an e-ink display cell phone tomorrow.
Really?
I really would.
That's a big statement. Like, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
know if
I want my if I want my yeah. content, I don't want it on a little screen.
Good point. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just my two cents.
It's so easy to put in my purse.
It is. It is. But
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I would go for one. I would. You okay. know, it's somewhere between the smartphone and the dumb phone lives like an e-ink phone. And that's kind of what I want.
All right. So before we go to interview, I do want to share a few fun things, which I'm really proud about. I am in Newsweek en Español this week on an article on, thank you, on Latinas working in AI. So I made the Newsweek Latinas working in AI list. So thank you to Monica Talon for interviewing me for that. So we'll share a link. Super proud and excited. And yes, I am Latina. A lot of people, for some reason, because of the name, they're like, oh, okay. Yes, I am Latina. And then excited, I'm heading to Munich right after CES for the DLD conference. I'm going to be one of the speakers there. Esther Dyson, yes. who's like a technology, you know, icon, is going to be there. I love her. She's fantastic. Lots of really amazing speakers at DLD in Munich. So I'll be there. Excited about it. DLD is like one of the top tech conferences in Europe. Yeah. And for those that listen to the Pivot podcast, that's where like Professor Scott Galloway and Kara Swisher met. So I'm hoping that something serendipitous happens. And, you know, I'll be on stage at DLD.
What will you be speaking on?
AI and spatial computing and the future of AI wearables. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Are we? Is this going to be able to be viewable to listeners?
I don't know. I don't know. Like, I don't. It's my first time at DLD, so I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know if they have a virtual ticket. They might have one, but I don't know. But I'll be definitely sharing like snippets, possibly on my socials.
Awesome.
After, but it's going to be. I'm debuting a new talk focused on AI and spatial computing, and obviously the future of the post smartphone future. What might come next? What could replace it? Et cetera.
E-ink so. Displays. We just.
Displays. There you go. Yeah, I need to add that to my lineup. So anyway, so for this week's interview, we have Dr. Lydia Kostopoulos, who is an innovation consultant. She's also been working really hard and really, really focused on human performance. She and I have had fantastic conversations on longevity, emerging technology, and everything that's happening in that space. So that's coming up right after the break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Thank you. Now I have my dear friend, Dr. Lydia Kostopoulos, joining me for Tech Magic. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much, Kathy. I'm so happy to be here.
I am so thrilled that you're here, and we have lots to get through and talk about. And you and I know each other personally. We've known each other for a while. I think it's like through Foresight and through like the defense industry in DC. I don't even know how we connected.
Yes, it was through defense VR or AR, something like
that. Yeah, because I live in DC. Most people don't know this, but I live in Washington, DC. And there is a just very small component of my work that has been with the defense industry. So it's not something I do, you know, on a constant basis. But that's kind of how you and I connected. And we actually met in person when I was in Edinburgh and met for coffee and everything, got to chatting. And I knew I had to have you on the podcast. So, you know, Dr. Kostopoulos, can you please tell people a little bit about who you are and what you do? And we'll get into it.
Sure. I'm a strategy and emerging technologies advisor. I help my clients understand what emerging tech can do for them and their value proposition and expand markets.
I love that. And you're doing a lot of work across the globe. I know you do a lot of work in DC, but also like Middle East, like a lot of different countries right now. So it's very, you have a very global perspective. I love that. So in previous episodes of the podcast, we've talked about, you know, movies wanting to use AI voices for actors. You know, in a recent episode, we talked about the Beatles' new song that's smashing records. You know, it's 2023 and the Beatles are still smashing records, which is crazy. But how do you think that's a reflection of how emerging technology makes us think about death?
Well, I think that we are definitely being challenged right now to revisit and reimagine what death looks like. But death is actually, our reimagining of it is actually happening at the same time as we are reimagining our longer lives and eternal lives. And so you've got the gene therapies, you know, trying to reverse age people. And then you've got, I guess, the death tech industry, which is looking how to immortalize people's consciousness or memories in different ways. And I think that each person deals with grief very differently. And so for some people, it'll work having a hologram of their parents. So, for example, Kim Kardashian had a hologram of her dad gifted to her for a birthday. And then you've got Robbie Williams' daughter who feels very disturbed by the deep fakes of her father. And so different people have different reactions to these things. And in Shanghai, there's funeral homes that offer an avatar service for the deceased. So like we are changing and evolving and leveraging tech, and everybody is different. So I think we're exploring our differences in there too.
And I agree with you. I think my first article in 2020 for Forbes was about digital embalmers, right? And like this idea of living, you know, of like living beyond your physical self and how, you know, death tech and everything that's happening in that space, which I find fascinating. I think it's a really interesting space. But, you know, you're working, you mentioned you've worked with a lot of companies to identify technology ethics, you know, and I think that's super interesting. But what personal philosophy do you use to help guide these clients in such a moment in time where we're talking about the Beatles coming back? We're talking about, you know, a funeral home that for avatar services. What is the personal philosophy that you have here?
So I first start with the same question all the time, which is, what are you in the business of doing? And I ask that because I have, for example, this one client said to me, all right, I want AI. And I'm like, okay, what do you want to do with it? And he's like, I don't know, but I know I need it. And I'm like, no, this is not how this works. You have to first start with, what are you in the business of doing? And to kind of drive that point home, I give them the example of Kodak. And I say, you know, Kodak thought it was in the business of printing amazing quality pictures. But had it understood itself to be in the business of memory preservation, they would have NFTs at this point in time and a million other things. And so it goes back to, what are you in the business of doing? And then after we've established that part, then it's like, great, you know, where are you looking to grow? What is the value you want to deliver? And then, you know, getting into the technology and then the ethics part about like, okay, well, this tech potentially has an environmental implication. So, for example, a few weeks ago, I was in London giving a talk on AI and corporate social responsibility and talking about the UN Sustainable Development Goals, which I think are a fabulous framework for anybody who's interested in ethics just to kind of look at. And place that within the ESG, the model that most people are familiar with. And people don't realize that data centers and AI require a lot of water, but we live in a water scarce world right now. And so people are going to have to think differently about what data centers they're using, that whole kind of compliance part and effect on the environment. And then when it comes to, for example, the social part, and in this example, so the AI, thinking about like the implications of deep fakes, the implications of misinformation, disinformation. I really like the fact that actress Kate Winslet did a film with her actual daughter, actually, on what it's like for a parent to be dealing with a teenager who has been sucked into the world of social media and is depressed and potentially suicidal. And this is a real problem that people face. And I think that organizations and entities that are working around that space need to step up and take part in the responsibility piece of that. And then finally, in the governance part, technological unemployment, people don't realize like, oh, we're going to incorporate this tech and then we're just going to lay off tons of people. And there's so many ways, and this is the fallacies that people think that they lay off people because people are complicated and then they're going to make more money. And it's like, no, you can have your people and then make more money. And AT&T is a perfect example of just upskilling people to do that.
Well, yeah. And eventually, if you lay everyone off, like, how are they going to buy services that you're like, how? Yeah, I had that conversation the other day. I'm like, yeah, I mean, the companies respond to the shareholders and the shareholders want to see growth every quarter. But if eventually no one's buying the service because everyone's replaced by AI, then how does this loop work? Because it doesn't. Right. So I think that there's that realization. You bring up this good point about social media and AI and everything that's happening. So, you know, the last 13 years, you know, social media has shown us that, you know, algorithms, you know, can definitely divide us. They can put us into bubbles. How do you see algorithms, you know, potentially bring us back together, especially when it comes to maybe love and personal relationships? Is there a positive aspect here?
I think that with the epidemic of loneliness, that question is dear to many people's hearts. And my first thing would be the same thing, you know, when it comes to the business side, you know, what are you in the business of doing? I think on the flip side, when it comes to us individually, it's we need to find ourselves first. So we need to step back from the churn of social media, the churn of our busy calendars and say, well, who am I? Who is the person I want to become? Who is the person I am, actually? Because sometimes we don't realize and we've become a person that we didn't really want to be. And so I think that we need to spend time like delving into ourselves and saying, what are the communities I want to be a part of? And I think that the algorithms have pushed us into bubbles, but that was kind of like the first version. The newer version that we're seeing is where people are seeking out niche communities, whether they find them in groups on social media or whether they're creating them by themselves in small private networks. But people are looking for that meaning. And that meaning comes from the identities that we have about ourselves, who, again, like I said, who we want to be and become, our hobbies, our interests, those things help us connect more meaningfully.
I love that. I think it's incredibly important in today's, you know, in the moment we're living through today with this so much loneliness, right? And in this kind of divided world that we live in. You know, what is your philosophical advice? What a philosophical advice can you give, you know, our audience, the people that are listening to Tech Magic, when it comes to using technology in their personal lives and with family and friends? Like, what is your advice to them? Because there is this moment of loneliness and we kind of tend to live inside our devices and sometimes ignore everyone around us if they're not in our phone or something.
Yeah. So that question isn't so simple. The first thing, again, I would go to the, you know, dig deep into yourself and who you are and who you want to be, because that will dictate a little bit of how you want to spend your time and where you want to place your attention. After that's determined, then I think that we need to understand the boundaries that we need to have in place, because technology can be all consuming. It can be so consuming to the point where we don't even have enough space between sleeping and our device and waking up and our device. And
feel discharged. I tend to do that, but I always tell myself, don't. I'm like, but yeah, I fight with that a lot.
I try so hard. I'm like, I want 30 minutes before bed not to have any screens. But the boundaries piece actually is more than just putting the phone physically away. The boundaries is really about the cybersecurity, the protecting your space and your privacy, and understanding that when you post something, you are giving that away, and that that will be used in so many ways that you can't imagine today and will never be able to imagine in the future. And that even with 30 seconds of somebody's voice, it can be recreated. And even with like the videos and all of that. And for parents, I think parents need to think about their children and how their presence online could potentially hurt them in the future. And there was this one awareness campaign that showed how a malicious actor could try to pretend that they've kidnapped a child of somebody. Separately from that, it's been shown that the cognitive development of toddlers is inhibited when they are on the devices all the time. And so I do think that we need to have boundaries for our emotional and cognitive health, but also something that doesn't really get talked about is to have space for us to grow into new people, because we need time to explore ourselves away from everything else so that we can find the new chapters that we want in our life. And so I think that's kind of the philosophy part that I think of.
I love that. I was actually right before interview, I was sitting outside. I was walking my dog. And for some reason, my dog just said, I'm just going to sit here. Like he was like, I'm not moving. And normally I would be like pulling him, like, let's go back into the house. But I took a moment, just sat down and watched the leaves fall. And it was one of those moments like, I need to do more of this. This is what I need more of in my life, and not be so like, oh, I need to make sure, you know, has any messages or checking Slack or, you know, on LinkedIn or working on this. And So definitely resonates with me. So I have another question. So the Sapien 2.0 game asks deep questions, like if a loved one uploaded their brain to the cloud, would you interact with it? And Amazon actually has a show called Upload about this very same similar thing. I actually did some advising when they launched on, you know, Ask a Futurist about the show. But, you know, I don't know if you've watched it or not. I don't think that's relevant. It's more like, do you think that's where we're heading when we're thinking about this, the evolution of human relationships? And, you know, are we going to be engaging with our deceased and our future selves, even our future selves uploaded into, you know, an algorithm or even the brain uploaded to the cloud? Like, do you see that as something, you know, there's obviously Neuralink starting to do the trials. Lots of stuff, you know, happening in this space. But what are your thoughts around that?
So when I made that game, Sapien 2.0, it was 2018-19. And I imagined kind of what's happening today, which is companies like Replica, where you can create an algorithm and be friends with it and hang out with it. And actually, one of my art pieces centers around this. It's called I Can Complete You. And it has a robot with this like heart and all of that. And the premise is that can a robot, an algorithmic conversational bot, replace human companionship and substitute it with this digital companionship? And what we've seen this year is yes. We have seen people create these avatars and hang out with them. I remember reading somewhere, this one woman said that she went on vacation and took her Google Home with her on vacation because she wanted to interact with it.
Yeah.
And so we are in the process of creating these relationships. Whether we are yet at the point to be able to upload our brain is a different story, and time will tell. But the Connectome project is one to look out for, because if they neurologically map our minds, that is one step closer to being able to copy what we've got.
That's really interesting. So right after this interview, I'm heading over to Bethesda, where the new Pronuvo clinic is in DC, to get a Pronuvo scan. It's like a full body MRI. And I was thinking about that, like, wow, I'm going to get my brain scanned in many, like all my organs, right? So yeah, I think that there's so many advancements here when it comes to technology and looking inside our brains and thinking about our intelligence, both, you know, artificial, but also the power of our brains and kind of what's happening there. So there's a term that I think you can help bring some clarity to. So what is imagination performance? Is imagination more important with Gen AI right now? You know, it's not on the horizon. It's right here, right? With Gen AI making the impact it's making. And can AI can have hallucinations. Is that a form of imagination? Like, what are your thoughts around that?
So imagination performance is dear to my heart because it's I'm really into human performance. And I thought, why don't we have imagination performance? And the premise around it is I was working with a client who asked me to do some futurist work. And so I presented a brief with some futurist 2030 ideas, and 2030 is really not far away. But the client just couldn't fathom something so different. And that in there made me think we really need to have some more imagination performance where we can feel more comfortable about potentially different futures because they're happening right before our eyes right now. I mean, in this year alone with generative AI, we've gone from not knowing in generative AI to, oh my gosh, I'm doing everything with it. And that has transformed us. And so when it comes to generative AI and our imagination, I think that when technology can do everything we want, what's left is, what do you want? And you're going to have to be able to answer that question and say, okay, well, what is it I want? And you need to have imagination, because every single tool, product, fashion, anything you saw, it started from somebody's imagination who said, I want to make this, and this is how I'm dreaming it. And then they eventually executed it, and then it came out. But it starts with imagination. And so I think that we can't use these tools to their fullest if we don't have that.
I absolutely love that. And one last question, because I think you're very much into this space and you and I have talked about longevity. I know it's not the focus of this interview per se, but your thoughts around longevity, because it's such an interesting industry. It's an industry that I follow, you know, on the periphery. Like, it's not something I'm fully involved in. I just keep a lot, you know, my eyes on it. I read whatever I can. There's obviously a lot happening. There's the, is it the Longevity Olympics? Or like, I don't know what they're called. But what are your thoughts around longevity? Because I think it's such a fascinating place, and you focus on imagination performance, but also physical performance in some of the things you do on a personal level.
Absolutely. So I started this project called Project N of One, because I have tons of data that I track on my body and my environment and all of that. And I was really curious about healthy aging protocols of other people, because I have created my own. And I just, like I mentioned at the beginning of this conversation, that, you know, everybody grieves differently. Well, everybody practices their health differently. And so I was curious. And so I started an interview series asking people about their healthy aging protocols. And it was absolutely fascinating to see that the way that we go about our health is really the way that we have grown up and our experiences and all of that. And I think there's a social movement in this space of physical performance. And you can see that in celebrities that are looking better and better as they age. And I think that that's going to trickle down into mainstream, where more and more people are interested in like looking their best.
I'll tell you this before you keep going. I literally just saw Demi Moore at the CFDA Awards, and I was like blown away. I mean, I was like, wow, this woman is aging backwards. Literally the thought that came to mind.
Well, I mean, and it's not just visually. You can be very strong. So if you look at Jennifer Lopez, her stamina is incredible, and her dancing. And so I think that there's a lot that we can do, and we're looking at it differently. And so I think that's like kind of like the next frontier. And there's a lot of science behind what could be possible. But I think culturally, that's the important thing to watch out for, because culturally, it's starting to become far more interesting and intriguing and aspirational to hit that 50 marker and look, you know, 35 and feel 35 and be able to have the energy of 35.
That's so incredibly interesting. Okay, so people that listen to this interview and find you fascinating as I do, because I think you're brilliant. How can they connect with you? What's the best way for them to connect with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter or X and Instagram, but you can find me on lkcyber.com. It's got kind of all the many things that I do.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for being on Tech Magic.
Thank you for having me.
All right. So that was a fantastic interview with Dr. Lydia Costopoulos. So Lee, any thoughts? Do you want to live to 150?
Oh God. We'll see how the next year goes.
ask your AI. Can I ask ChatGPT? Does Lee Keeler want to live till 150? I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I'd like to say yes. Yeah, I think so. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Sure. Let's spin the wheel and see what happens in the future. But at the same time, there's a lot of questionable problems that arise with that.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, my youngest, we're in the car this weekend, and she asked me, she said, when I'm a grandma, she said, when she's a grandma, am I going to be around to see her grandbabies? And I said, oh, honey, you know, I don't think so, but who knows, right? So I might be around as a hologram. Who knows, right? But I really said, I don't think so, honey, but.
But you know, your upload will be there.
My upload right? might be there. I don't know. my hologram, possibly. So we'll see. We'll see. I do want to get that hologram, that volumetric video of my dad reading Llama Llama Red Pajama.
I think that that's. Mm-hmm. To me, that's actually one of those endearing use cases for the technology that I'd like to see kind of become a little bit more accessible for people, just for historical purposes, you know, put a little projector and put it right, you know, there in front of people so they can capture those things and have them forever. Yeah.
Well, I think that's where spatial video, for example, is going to be very powerful. In the Apple Vision Pro, right? I think that's going to be a selling point, I think, for a lot of people that are not the tech.
But it was one of those, that was one of those things that people kind of thought was a little creepy too. People don't like thinking about that type of stuff. You know, it's a hard conversation to breach.
It's a hard emotion
to, you know, to process, you know, and then in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, if I have that, then I can actually build like a projector into like my headstone. And then I can just pop up at people when they come and visit.
Dia de los Muertos. They put your altar out there. It's like, let me eat the food. Yum, yum, yum. Anyway, we recently rewatched the Book of the Dead. Book of the Dead? Oh, I can't remember the name of the movie. And then Coco. And they're both about Dia de los Muertos. All right. So now we're going to go to Lily with her dispatch from The Fringe. Lily, what's going on?
Hey, Kathy and Lee. I have a story for you. In this week's Dispatch from The Fringe, doctors invent a new way to 3D print inside the human body. Okay, it's actually a team of researchers from Duke University and Harvard Medical School, but they've developed a new way to 3D print inside the human body using ultrasound waves and an injectable biocompatible ink. So what happens is you inject the ink and it reacts to a special ultrasound machine that hardens the ink, and that's how you get the 3D print. It's called DVAP, Deep Penetrating Acoustic Volumetric Printing. So sound waves are absorbed and increase the temperature to harden the ink. And any extra ink can be removed using a syringe. So far, this has only been tested out on a goat and a chicken, but they were able to address a bone defect inside the chicken's leg. So who knows what this will bring for people in the future. And that is your dispatch from The Fringe.
All right. Another week, another amazing dispatch from The Fringe. Yeah. I know you love this segment, don't you, Lee?
It's one of my favorites. You just don't know what's going to come from it. And we sometimes get a hint, you know, as these stories come through. And sometimes we don't. And so
we are left speechless. Oh, how funny. Well, another great week in the books. Lee, thanks for joining me.
Yes. And I hope that you have a fantastic holiday season.
I do too. I hope you do too. And I know we're still going to have episodes dropping during the holidays. So stay tuned. They might be pre-recorded, so they might not be necessarily about everything that's happening in the news, but we'll have some special episodes. Hopefully, my hope is that we'll be able to do the Prince episode that we've been promising everyone. Pre-record
that
one.
Yes, we can make that happen.
So I know we should make that happen. I think that'd be a really good one. But you still have fresh content next week. I think just the last week of the year is the one we're gonna take a little break. The Christmas week in December, not a break from the podcast, just pre-record a few little things for y'all. But yeah, thank you for being here, Lee, and thanks to everyone that's listening. I'm glad you guys are enjoying Tech Magic. Come for the tech, stay for the magic. And I think you can expect great things from Tech Magic in 2024. So please subscribe, share, and once again, thank you for listening to the podcast.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth. your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.